Thank you all so very much for welcoming us to your beautiful sanctuary today. Very, very grateful to be here in Heartland and to share a little bit about what we do. So we have Auralia Gonzalez and her husband with us today, as well as founding members of New Sanctuary Movement, Bill and Joanne Lang, and Magdalena Lopez, who has been a member of New Sanctuary for many years. It is a collaborative effort, and we are, with the exception of my position, actually entirely volunteer-run and volunteer-led. So we depend upon not just the talents and skills of volunteers, but engagement and ideas and personal experience. It's from the personal experience of many of our volunteers that we choose directions that we need to take in order to provide, just basically a free and happy and sustainable life for people in the Milwaukee community and our state. So a couple of things occur to me. Really, the quote on the front of the program is where sanctuary began. When strangers sojourn with you in your land, you shall do them no wrong. The strangers who sojourn with you shall be to you as natives among you, and you love them as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. And that is the biblical definition of what we think of as sanctuary. Sanctuary as a religious and political endeavor began in the 1980s in this country as a result of the terrible civil war that was happening in El Salvador. And members of mainly Catholic community at the time, who were keenly aware of how our own U.S. government had participated in kind of the dissemination and destruction that led to the civil war in El Salvador, basically took it upon themselves to provide refuge for people who were fleeing El Salvador, but who our government would not deem refugees. So because of the sanctuary movement in the 1980s, in which Bill and Joanne participated, people were given shelter from, basically most certain death. At that point, sanctuary was kind of a sequestering of people. If you see footage of sanctuary in the 80s, you'll see often the person who's being interviewed or the person who's being asked to describe their situation as a refugee is hidden from view, has something over their heads, because people were deeply, deeply afraid of being targeted and assassinated. In fact, one of the places I worked in Chicago as a musician and kind of what's called the peace program and the youth program there was Centro Romero, named for an archbishop, a Salvadoran archbishop, Oscar Romero, who was one of the unfortunate victims of the Salvadoran conflict in the 80s. So moving ahead, New Sanctuary was kind of a resurgence of the sanctuary tradition that began in the mid-2000s when, under George W. Bush, there began to be more aggressive raids in workplaces and raids in, what the song referred to before, migrant farmers. You know, very targeted raids on migrants who were participating in the economy here. And I think what we have to remind ourselves, participating in the economy in a way that was sanctioned by our government. So when the rug was suddenly pulled out from under people who up until then had been having a rather, cyclical relationship with the economies in their own countries and economy here, the response among faith organizations was a different kind of sanctuary that instead of sequestering, hiding people would elevate people's stories and actually raise awareness of really an injustice that was happening, but not just an injustice, a double standard as to how people were allowed to pursue, you know, in many cases, a very modest economic sustainability for their families. So in about 2006 or so, new sanctuary chapters began forming all over the country. So New Sanctuary in Milwaukee works with Voces de la Frontera very closely. You're all welcome to visit our wonderful office in Walker's Point on 5th Street between Mineral and Washington. It is there that all the departments in Voces are housed, as well as New Sanctuary. But in addition to being part of Voces and working closely on their projects, we also, as New Sanctuary Movement Milwaukee, partner with sanctuary coalitions all across the country. To basically raise awareness, an awareness, but also a compassion rooted in interfaith. Many of us who are called to worship, many of us who are called to devote a piece of our lives to our faith, are called out of a place of compassion, out of a place of curiosity, out of a place of wanting to explore and even wanting to delve into the discomfort of what it means to be human. And what I've already seen just in this worship service is that you are people who delve into that discomfort. You are people who wish to face the painful realities and kind of contemplate how you as an individual, and then also, you know, as a congregation, can confront and engage and really, turn your faith in some ways outward, because there's this faith, the faith that we have within ourselves, and the, you know, we're constantly digging deeper, but also we're constantly being given opportunities to engage, to reach out. So there are now sanctuary coalitions across the nation. There's one in Milwaukee, there's one in Philadelphia, there's one in New York. The New York sanctuary received a lot of attention because its coalition leader, Ravi Ragbir, was basically put into final deportation removal orders. I don't know if you saw footage of people marching. If you look up, if you Google New Sanctuary Coalition New York and Ravi Ragbir, he's from Trinidad and has been the coalition leader in New Sanctuary for many years. And what we saw with Ravi and what we're seeing among other sanctuary and immigrant advocacy groups across the country is there is evidence that immigration is now targeting people who are leaders in the movement. So all this to say, right now, where we are at as New Sanctuary Movement Milwaukee is offering services that people who are in, you know, not citizens yet need for lack of other pathways. So one of the main things we will do is, for example, offer people accompaniment to and from court cases, to and from detention centers where family members might be. We will connect people to much-needed legal advocacy. Something that is not understood on a big level is that if you are a U.S. citizen and you commit a crime, you have the right to an attorney. You know, we all know you have the right to an attorney. One may be provided for you by, well, if you are a person, you're not a citizen and you are targeted to go through immigration proceedings, you do not have the right to an attorney and you have to seek legal aid privately, which sometimes can be prohibitively, in fact, most times, prohibitively expensive unless you can find basically what is the equivalent of a public defense for immigration. And that is only provided through grants, that is only provided through, in fact, I was just Friday at an attorneys conference at Christ Presbyterian Church in Madison, and organizations like Christ Presbyterian, although they don't offer, and we'll get into that in a second, physical sanctuary, what they're doing is they are offering their space for a free legal clinic for members of the immigrant community who need everything from consultations to defense, if a family member or they themselves are going through removal proceedings. So I don't want to, I know that we're a little late, but quickly, and then what I'm hoping to do is have a little time for questions. I think that a lot of times when a church, and I should say that in Milwaukee, we have had extraordinary support from First Unitarian Society, Reverend Jennifer Nordstrom. I have also been approached directly by members of the Unitarian Church, Olympia Brown in Racine, who do amazing work with the youth chapter at Voces de la Frontera, Youth Empowered in the Struggle, the Unitarian Church in Waukesha. What I'm saying is that Unitarians across the country, including yourselves, are actively standing up and reaching out and actively basically asking us, not telling us what you can do for us, but asking us, what do you need? And we are so, so very grateful for that. But what we do among other Unitarians plus interfaith organizations in Milwaukee and across the state is we have a monthly vigil. And the vigil is often, like the service today, themed around immigrant issues. It generally has to do with what the latest challenge, what the latest, what the latest endeavor is as far as advocacy. And we have a monthly vigil. It's every first Tuesday of every month at either a church in Milwaukee. Sometimes we will go as far as Racine. You're all welcome to attend. I'll make sure that Carrie Duma and Susan Vincent, who reached out to me initially, get all of the contact information as to how members of this congregation can participate. In addition to our vigils at, I call it a movable sanctuary, every first Thursday of every month, we are outside of Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Milwaukee, and we have a vigil there just to make our presence known. Sometimes we'll do what's called a Jericho Walk in the tradition of the walls come tumbling down, where we will actually do a physical walk on the sidewalk in front of the building. And basically just any sort of a faith organization can bring their banner, can bring to send the message not just to immigration officials and agents inside the building, but to people who are coming in and out of the building who perhaps might be in or at risk of removal proceedings. And seeing that advocacy, especially among people who, for lack of a better term, look European, look white, is extremely meaningful to people, because we have a leadership right now in this country that is doing everything they can to isolate and divide. And if you, the more news you listen to, the more you're exposed. If you do not have an alternative to reach out, if you're in a segregated community and you're not necessarily living among people of different cultures, different socioeconomic incomes, you very quickly receive the impression that perhaps you are unwanted. You're receiving kind of subliminal instructions to, for lack of a better term, keep in the shadows. So. In addition to our vigils, in addition to accepting very gracious invitations from congregations like yours, we connect people with legal services. We are constantly looking for alternatives to private attorneys, clinics, Voces de la Frontera, who is our partner organization, actually has every other Saturday an immigration attorney who is there completely gratis, you know, free of charge, who is there to give consultations. Unfortunately, if somebody has a more complicated case, you know, they will need to then seek a private attorney. So right now we're at a point where we're trying to seek for the people we work with, basically free legal aid. So let's see, legal aid, we have our vigils. Another response to the need for legal aid, we are getting together right now, teams of volunteers, and training people how to basically help a client gather what one might need to gather for what we call deportation defense. If somebody suddenly is threatened by immigration or threatened by, and this happens, I think we don't really realize right now, there's an important distinction between what our government deems a criminal act and what we grow up viewing as a criminal act. And in a moment, I'm going to turn it over to Aralia, because one of the major issues that we confront as New Sanctuary Movement, I would say the vast majority of clients who come to us because they've been stopped for driving without a license. And the easy response to that is, well, if you can't get a license, then, you know, why are you driving? Like, nobody should drive without a license. Well, if people are denied, I mean, imagine just being denied access to a license. We don't live in Manhattan or Boston or San, you know, we don't live in an area where public transportation is available, you know? And the reality of work, I don't know how many of you have, you know, fair commutes back and forth to work. You can't always work in your neighborhood. You know, you really do in Wisconsin. We need access to vehicles. So what ends up happening is somebody, you know, people drive without a license. And these are people who know how to drive. Basically, all that people need is just permission, state-sanctioned permission to drive with a license, even though they're not citizens. It's available in Illinois. It is not available in Wisconsin. And one of the things that Voces de la Frontera and New Sanctuary have been advocating for is give people the right to drive. It's a core issue because something as simple as permission to drive would eliminate what is happening now, which we see on a very broad level, the criminalization of individuals who are going to work. You know, the criminalization of individuals who are contributing to their community and, you know, suddenly because of two incidents being stopped driving without a license are going to criminal court. And then this involves contracting a criminal lawyer in addition to an immigration lawyer. So you start to see, one, the racial profiling that unfortunately is a result of these sort of sanctions. A lot of times clients who come to us being, you know, stopped for driving without a license, it turns out that it's like, well, what were you doing? You know, were you doing anything that, you know, were you speeding? Were you? No. So it's important to remember that, too, that why is somebody pulled over? Why? You know, start to ask these questions about, and, you know, but then, of course, the charge is there and the criminal proceedings begin. And at that point, especially at this point in our society, somebody is at risk then for encountering immigration. And immigration is able to say, well, you have criminal charges against you. So one thing that we as New Sanctuary try to raise awareness about is, what is a criminal case? Who is a criminal? We as people of faith constantly, like, who? Okay, so who? Okay, if somebody is charged with a criminal offense, do they deserve to be ripped apart from their families? And in some cases, if they're a young person who spent their entire life here, do they deserve to be sent back to a country that is really not their own anymore? So before I turn it over to Aurelia, I'm going to mention we do have a vigil coming up on April 10th. It will be at Ascension Lutheran Church. I'll send Carrie and Susan news about it. At 6:30 in the evening at Ascension Lutheran Church on the corner of Layton and Scott in Milwaukee. On April 11th, I'm hoping that a representative from your Social Action Committee can attend a Sanctuary Coalition meeting that is being spearheaded by Reverend Jennifer Nordstrom in Milwaukee. And it's going to be a group of statewide churches. So Faith in Action from Madison are going to be there. They already have sanctuary churches across the state. By Sanctuary Church, this is a church who whose congregation has decided unanimously we are going to keep a space in the church, and we are going to keep this space open for somebody who, when they begin their removal proceedings, can make a conscious choice to come to our church and seek sanctuary. Churches are considered sensitive spaces, like hospitals and schools. It's not that immigration cannot enter a church. It is just it just looks pretty bad, and it's a sensitive space, and it's protected. So I don't want to want to give Aurelia time since much more than New Sanctuary Advocacy, a wonderful way to really kind of connect to what's going on is to just hear from people who are directly affected and whose daily lives are affected. Aurelia, I had the pleasure of being with her last week. So she's fairly new to New Sanctuary. Her daughter, however, is a DACA recipient and has been an extremely strong advocate for immigrant rights. She is she works at the Roberto Hernandez Center for Latino Advocacy at UWM. And obviously she gets that fire from her mother. So thank you so much for having us again, and I'll turn it over to Aurelia Gonzalez, and I'll be translating for her.
Thank you. Buenos días, mi nombre es Aurelia Gonzalez, y nosotros vinimos hace 23 años a este país con muchos sueños. Vinimos a sacar a nuestra familia adelante.
I'm Aurelia Gonzalez. I've lived here for 23 years with my family, with many, many hopes and dreams. We came here to basically move our family forward.
Nosotros tuvimos que, mi esposo y yo, agarrar dos trabajos cada quien, trabajar 7 días de la semana para poder pagar la universidad de mi hija, y lo logramos. Salimos adelante sin ninguna deuda.
My husband and I, for years, both worked 2 jobs, 7 days a week, to pay for university for your daughter, right, la hija, for our daughter. And for many years, this is how we worked hard. But aside from the hard work, there were no problems. We were moving forward with our goals.
Como muchos piensan que nosotros venimos a quitarles, a pedir ayudas, a quitarles trabajos. No, vinimos a sacar adelante a nuestros hijos, a demostrar que nosotros podemos con nuestro trabajo. No necesitamos depender de ayudas, porque ese es nuestro orgullo, pagar sus carreras. Y el único delito es querer tener bien a nuestros hijos como cualquier otra familia.
So, our only crime is that we want our kids to be successful and to have opportunity, like any other person. And there's a misconception that we come here to take jobs, that we come here to, you know, use social services, and that is a misconception. My husband and I, we worked and worked for years to be able to pay ourselves for our daughter's education, and that was something that we were proud to do. It was a given that we were going to do this for our daughter.
Pero en el último año, las cosas han cambiado demasiado. Nos sentimos perseguidos, nos sentimos con miedo, tenemos depresión. No podemos salir tan simple y sencillamente a un almuerzo, a una comida fuera de nuestro condado porque sentimos que todos nos están mirando, la policía nos va a perseguir. Entonces hemos decidido por estar encerrados en casa.
Thank you. The situation has changed drastically over the last year. We are living now in a state of pretty consistent fear. We don't leave our home the way we used to, you know, just to do simple things like go out to eat somewhere, maybe go into a different county. Right now, there is a very kind of clear feeling of being watched. And it's contributing to just a constant state of anxiety, depression, and basically we feel trapped inside our home.
Lamentablemente, el que está padeciendo mucho, mi hijo el más chico, tiene 14 años y él está muy enojado, está frustrado, desesperado, que por qué está pasando eso, si él es ciudadano y se siente que al gobierno no le importa, que si él puede estar aquí y de sus padres los echan, ¿qué va a hacer él de su vida? Él está, les ha afectado mucho, está enojado, está frustrado. Está muy chico para tener tanta carga sobre sus hombros.
Thank you. This is affected primarily, and unfortunately, my 14-year-old son, who is a citizen, and he has been lately saying things like, just like the government doesn't care about me. Like, this country doesn't care about me. They're putting me in a position where my family could be taken from me at any moment. He's asking questions like, why am I a citizen? The rest of my family is not. And how could this be happening to me and my family? And I see that in him, and it just feels like way, way too much for a 14-year-old child to be carrying on his shoulders.
Muchas personas piensan, o algunas, ¿por qué no se regresan a su país? Porque mis hijos no conocen mi país. Si yo me los llevo allá, es como si me los estoy llevando a la muerte. Porque el simple verlos, se van a dar cuenta que ellos no hablan el español como yo. No lo quieren hablar, la forma de vestir. Entonces se van a dar cuenta que ellos no son de allá. Y son, como decimos nosotros, presa fácil para que los maten, los secuestren, siendo que nosotros no tenemos dinero para pagar un secuestro.
So there's the question that we hear a lot, why don't you just go back to your country, you know? And at this point, taking my children back to my country is in some ways like taking them to, it's like the death of something for them. They didn't grow up there, you know. They don't speak Spanish like I do. They speak Spanish, but in a different manner. And there also is the very harsh reality of kidnappings. Right now in Mexico, people are targeting, people who apparently come from the United States. We don't have the money to support our children. If our children were kidnapped, if our children were threatened in this manner, we simply don't have the resources to protect them from that sort of from that sort of threat.
Desafortunadamente, ya no somos ni de aquí ni de allá. Tenemos más de la mitad de nuestra vida viviendo en Estados Unidos. Nosotros, mi esposo y yo, ya no nos acoplaríamos a una vida allá. Hemos tenido que pasar tristezas a distancia. Murieron familiares. No pudimos despedirnos de ellos. Pero estamos aquí con el propósito firme de sacar a nuestros hijos adelante. Y somos más fuertes cada día. Nosotros sabemos, con la ayuda de Dios, vamos a salir adelante. Y tenemos que ser más fuertes cada día. Y es tener la esperanza de que algo bueno está por venir.
Right now, there's a strange sensation that we're not from here, we're not from there. We made a very, very difficult decision to come to this country and to remain in this country and contribute to this country. This was a decision with many costs. We've lost over the past 23 years many family members and loved ones without being able to say goodbye. It's not easy, but we came and continue to move forward with the commitment to our children. And every day, with the love and the protection of God, we move closer and closer toward those goals, and we remain firm in our goals for being here. Yeah. All right. Thank you. I know that we're running late. If I could just briefly respond to Oralia, obviously, is the reason that I invited Oralia and her husband here today is they are strong people, very firmly rooted in their family, exceptional in their ability to manage the day-to-day stress of living undocumented, especially having children who, through deferred action, through citizenship, are rooted here. And para decir que como el estrés diariamente. So I think that as people of faith and people who want to begin the process of reaching out to our community, we need to think about the persecution, what essentially we view at New Sanctuary as persecution of the immigrant community, not just in terms of, you know, an ICE agent coming to one's home and detaining somebody, but in terms of the day-to-day pressure of having that feeling that I am being watched. It builds up and it creates a kind of pervasive, consistent anxiety that affects every other aspect of your life. At the conference I was at on Friday, a woman was talking about a woman who is a citizen. She's Bolivian, but a recent citizen. She dropped her son off to college, his first year of college in September. And time. Anyway, she was saying, I was filled with so much worry. I was filled with so much just questions. What would it be like if my son were a DACA recipient? And his very existence at college, his very existence here in this country, were hanging in the balance. How would that affect the way that I feel? So I know that we're over time. On May 1st, Voces de la Frontera will be marching in Waukesha. We will be marching for driver's licenses. We will be marching for an end to 287G, the program that the Waukesha Sheriff has applied for, which will basically train local police force to act as immigration agents. And we will be marching for the DREAM Act, a clean DREAM Act that will allow people who have been contributing and paying taxes and, you know, basically people who are essentially Americans, to start a clean pathway to citizenship. We hope that you join us. I have cards in my pocket. Keep in touch, and thank you for allowing us to be here today.
Thank you. Thank you.